Well, welcome to it then. Welcome to another episode of The Sweet Spot, brought to you by The Racing Post in association with Three Super Tips. And the main man is back in the chair, the punter's pal, back on the bag, Steve Palmer. How are you, Steve?
Very well, thank you, Dave. Yes, I've been gallivanting, as you put it last week. Went to the Emerald Isle. Big fan of the Emerald Isle. Had a great time over there. Played Killeen Castle, which is a Jack Nicklaus design. Just shy of the course record there. And then went to Laytown Races, which was one of the most spectacular places I've ever been. Great time on the Emerald Isle. Then I went to Wentworth. So I'm fully abreast on all the golf and raring to get back at it.
And you linked up with a very good golfer and former presenter of the Sweet Spot, Jack Reeve. How's Jack?
Yes. Jack Reeve got a very elegant golf swing. I think he's greatly missing presenting Sweet Spot. He knows how much fun you have.
And how was Wentworth? He was wandering up and down the fairways. Any insight? What can you give us?
Yeah, well, I came back very bleary-eyed from Dublin. I usually have the week off betting when I'm off. I like to sort of cleanse the mind. But because I was going to Wentworth on the Thursday, I was a guest of a member on the Thursday, access all areas. I was very excited. So I couldn't resist a wager. So very late on Wednesday night, I let myself down, really. I should have stopped with my policy. I backed Tommy Fleetwood each way, 10 places, just because I thought that would be a nice interest bet. And he finished one shot shy of the places. So, betting disappointment, but lessons learned. Back to my old policy of no betting on weeks off.
Now, we'll get on to what we've got coming up and we'll look back at last week. But a very able deputy stepped in as well, the champ. Yes. And he put up West Ham's Billy Horseshoe, who did the business. And he's a good lad, his champ. He switched on. You can read his thoughts in the RFO every week. And, you know, Steve, you mentioned that you try not to play when you're away. You say you've let yourself down. Is it because you didn't maybe put enough work in because you wasn't writing a preview?
Well, this is it. Normally, the whole of Monday I spent researching and making sure I picked the right fellas. But as I say, I was doing it with one eye open on Wednesday night. But I felt very guilty last week because it's the first time I've missed a big tournament. That's probably the biggest tournament I ever missed as a Racing Post tipster. So I felt guilty, but such a relief. I didn't need to worry. The champ stepped in. Billy Horschel, fantastic tip. Delighted for the champ. One of the nicest blokes you'll ever meet. And delighted for Billy Horschel, who's now a two-time Wentworth champion. And lots of hammers chants in the crowd. I wondered if it was you, Dave. There was also...
Oh, wasn't there?
Did you hear it all? They were just shouting, "Irons!" And he was hitting shots and, he's getting huge support from the West Ham fraternity. And, I knew you'd be sort of overcome with emotion when he won that.
Wonderful. Yes, wonderful. So before we get on to Billy Horschel and winning, you was there, Steve. Who did you follow? Was you following groups? Was you set up somewhere? What was the story?
Well, Rory McIlroy was out. I was there on Thursday and Rory McIlroy was out early. So followed him in his hoodie there. And then followed Fleetwood thereafter, who was out later. So and much of the time spent in the clubhouse, actually. It's such a wonderful location just to relax in the clubhouse there. So, it's a lovely place. It's a great championship venue, isn't it? We must give Wentworth a pat on the back. It fully deserves its status as the flagship event, doesn't it? It's such a thrilling finish because they've taken time to get those two closing holes right. They've tinkered with them through the years. They're absolutely perfect now, aren't they? Is there a more dramatic closing stretch in European golf now than the 17th and 18th at Wentworth? I'm not sure there is.
Yeah, I've seen a few shouts for maybe a Ryder Cup there at some point, Steve. You like the idea of that?
Why the heck not? Yeah, why the heck not? I'd like to see that. I spoke to Bruce Millington the other day and he would like to see an Open Championship there. Yeah, me and Bruce disagree greatly on whether the Open should be played at Lynx tracks. I think it has to stay at a Lynx track, but a Ryder Cup, yeah, I can certainly live with that. Yeah, definitely.
Right, let's get to it then. Billy Horschel doing the business and taking his career earnings to around about $50 million. And he showed at the end a bloke that has won that sort of money, Steve, because he showed minerals at the end, didn't he? That three-way playoff.
Well, he's a former FedEx Cup winner, isn't he? I guess that's a large portion of that booty there. But absolutely. Because on the 17th hole, he had a knee knocker for birdie at the 17th to get him back in it. He just snuck into the playoff, didn't he, over those closing holes and kept his head while others were losing theirs. Yeah, he clearly loves this track. He was fourth on debut at Wentworth, and he'll be back every year. I mean, the support he was getting from your mob, yeah, he must have this in his as a date in his diary every year from here on in. And yeah, I wondered what the American President's Cup skipper was thinking about it, because yeah, Billy Horschel's not going to be playing for America this week, and yeah, Billy Horschel probably feels a bit cheesed off about that. And I wonder if Jim Furyk has a little regret about that, because Horschel will be a real asset to the team in Canada this week.
Yeah, a great player. I mean, he does everything great, doesn't he? You know, he's not huge off the tee, but he's as an all-rounder, he ticks every box.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. A great all-rounder and a great ambassador for the sport. You know, he talks very well, doesn't he? If I was a neutral last week, which I pretty much was, I was delighted for Billy Horschel. And yeah, obviously your heart goes out a bit for Rory, who's we've mentioned how glum he's been looking and feeling on the course, but back to back runner up finishes add to that glumness, if that is indeed a word.
Where are we at now with Rory, Steve? Because I mean, he's playing some phenomenal golf, but just coming up short.
Well, he was a shot shy in the Irish Open, which was a real gut buster. He did well to pick himself up off the floor so quickly to contend last week. You could say he got a bit lucky on the 18th hole in regulation. You know, he pulled that approach and it was so far left, it missed the water. But in the playoff, he didn't put a foot wrong, really, did he? You know, two birdies in the playoff, not enough to progress. You know, a Horschel eagle, the golfing gods are against McIlroy at the moment. I think he's desperate for the season to end. I've been saying this for a long time. I think he's probably looking forward to the Dunhill Links, as we mentioned, because he's playing with his dad in that. He seems to enjoy St. Andrews playing with his dad. But I think he wants the season to end. Big reset. I would recommend taking a load of time off and come back fresh and hungry for success and end that major drought next year. But yeah, I felt for the lad. He's a top man, and hopefully he'll start winning tournaments again soon.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think it will just make the story even sweeter, the redemption that will come, because it will come. We know that. It will come. So,
I think it will come.
Forward to it. You know, he's going to be favourite, near enough favourite for every tournament he tees up in, though, Steve, isn't he?
Well, I think, is this major drought going to end next year? We pray to the golfing gods for mercy for McIlroy, but I think he needs time off. I think he looks... I think he looked tired on Sunday. I think he's battling with his swing on Sunday. He never looked entirely comfortable with his swing on Sunday. I think he's mentally jaded and he needs to down tools.
Right, takeaways from Wentworth then. We'll have to, of course, mention Tristan Lawrence, who was in that playoff, dropped out first hole, but another big showing.
Yeah, I watched a bit of the Piston on Thursday. He looked a bit bemused on the 17th tee when I said, "Go out the Piston!" I don't think he's heard that nickname. It's not a nickname that's caught on outside of the sweet spot world, is it? He turned around and looked at me and looked a bit bemused. But he did birdie the final two holes, 17 and 18. So I think I inspired him. A massively underrated player. People don't realise how good Thriston is. And it was Friday that he let the tournament slip, really. He finished Friday's round 6-6, bogeyed 17, bogeyed 18. And then on Sunday, he finished 5-5. So he had very contrasting finishes to his rounds last week. And, Friday's one killed him. But, Thriston the Piston, quality player. Yeah, almost certainly wrapped up his PGA Tour card now. Yeah, through the Race to Dubai ranking. So he'll be on the PGA Tour next year.
And one other player I wanted to ask you about, and you can flag up anyone you like, Steve, is Manasero. Obviously, he's a former winner at Wentworth. A player I love watching. Real classy. And it looks like he's got his game back together.
Yeah. It was just a step too far on Sunday, wasn't it? They're one of the Wentworth concierges, Mark, had backed Matteo Manasero and getting very excited. He showed me a spot around the turning circle outside the clubhouse where there's this step that was sort of hidden by the bushes and it gives you an extra bit of height to look down on the course. It was a lovely spot to watch the action. And he was on Matteo Manasero, and I was just expressing concern for him all week because... Yeah, the Johnson Workwear Open is not the BMW PGA Championship. I mean, Manasero won the Johnson Workwear Open. If he would have been absolutely back if he'd won at Wentworth. But you could see on Sunday, not entirely comfortable with the situation, was he? So it's great to see Matteo Manasero back to a degree, but he's not fully back yet, is he?
Any other takeaways? Champ, get a good mention to Baldwin.
Oh, blimey. Yeah. Baldwin was an early pace setter, wasn't he? Yeah, on him the week before in the Irish Open. And I would have been a little bit cheesed off at E1. But great. Yeah, last three tournaments, Baldwin's banked some big checks. It'll be popular this week in the Spanish Open. How much more has he got left in the tank? We shall see.
Right, we'll get to the Spanish Open after we have looked back on the Rippers. The Rippers winning the Livers. Now, I didn't get the exact amount, but I'd imagine that the Aussie boys have banked a few quid themselves here, Steve, have they?
Oh, I'm sure they have. Yeah. You weren't cheering on the Rippers? I mean, I didn't watch much of the Rippers. They were 4-1 winners last week when the market originally formed. But I think most of the betting action would have been when the John Rahm news broke. I don't know where you were when the John Rahm news broke. But John Rahm withdrew from this tournament on the Saturday morning before Legion 13 were due to play their first matches. So, yeah, if you could have found out about John Rahm being out before the bookmakers, then you probably would have backed the Rippers and you probably would have backed the Crushers, because Legion 13, which is Rahm's team, were the hot favourites for this. Yeah. And then John Rahm was replaced by John Catlin. A John for John replacement, but hardly like for like, are they? It's a bit like when Graham Taylor used to bring Nigel Clough off the bench for Paul Gascoigne. I was thinking, it's a big downgrading in quality. And John Catlin did okay, but that was Legion 13 essentially doomed, and then the Rippers did the business. It was an interesting tournament. I know hardly anyone watched it. And did you watch much, Dave? I mean, you can be forgiven.
I'm not going to lie. No, fair enough.
I'm not going to lie. I came back from Dublin a bit bleary. I went to Wentworth absolutely knackered. I didn't have much passion for tuning into this tournament, and that's someone who does follow the LIV circuit all year. The Ironheads were probably the most interesting story. That's gonna get him in it. The Ironheads were the most interesting story. Stay with us. Because the Ironheads were the 125-1 outsiders of the 13 teams in it last week. And they gave their backers a great run for their money. They beat Smash in the quarterfinals. So Brooks Koepka's team was upset in the quarterfinals. They beat Crushers in the semifinals, did the Ironheads. Bryson DeChambeau's team was upset by the Ironheads. So Kevin Na, Danny Lee, Scott Vincent, and Jinichiro Kazuma. One of the most humble lineups the most humble lineup in last week's event. Very nearly won. They got to the final day and they finished third.
I love the team events. I love the Ryder Cup. I actually really like the President's Cup as well. I've backed Team USA loads of times in recent years. But I just can't get into it, Steve. I don't know whether it's the team names put me off. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think the team event is probably one of the weakest of the LIV circuit. But we haven't got to worry about that for a while now. No LIV golf for ages. And, hopefully the powers that be can bring everyone together. We talk about Rory McIlroy needing his reset. Maybe he's going to have a busy few months getting the world of golf back together.
Well, I'd love tonight, let us know in the comments below if people are following the team event. If you've managed to find the winners, if you were ahead of the curve and found the John Rahm news and had the bookmakers' pants down, let us know in the comments below. Right, Steve. A really interesting tournament this week. No Sergio Garcia for a number of reasons, but there is a John Rahm. And before we jump into all of that, why no Garcia? We are seeing John Rahm here. So talk to us about that.
Well, golf, there's a lot of golf in politics. And, why John Rahm's been allowed into this is a question that needs answering. I mean, he hasn't paid his fines. He's been very audible about the fact he hasn't paid his DP World Tour fines. The sponsors obviously want John Rahm there. The galleries obviously want John Rahm there. He's going to put bums on seats. Will John Rahm be there? As we record this at 10 a.m. on Tuesday morning, there still has to be question marks on whether John Rahm will be there, not for political reasons, but for health reasons and for baby reasons. We'll come on to all this soon.
Right. Okay, let's start with the course. Where are we for this Spanish Open?
Club de Campo Villa de Madrid, Madrid, Spain. 7,154 yards. So very short course, par 71, three par fives, lots of short par fours. It's hosted 15 European Tour events in the modern era. 9 Spanish Opens, most recently 2019, 2021, 2022, 2023, the Madrid Open from 2001 to 2005, the Madrid Masters in 2008. The average winning score in the last 4 Spanish Opens has been 22 and a quarter under par. It's a tree-lined track, small greens, but very short, very easy for the professionals. Ivo Jina remains the course record holder. Ivo carded a 60 in the 2005 Madrid Open. I don't think we're going to be getting a 60 on Thursday this week. Some strong breezes on Thursday, but 3 calm days after that. So the Club de Campo will be overwhelmed over the final 3 days. A field of 144 going to post.
Okay, loads of course form. Winners in the field, plenty, is there?
Well, John Rahm is the main winner here. He's won 3 of the last 5 Spanish Opens, I believe. A couple of them coming here. Matthew Pavon, defending champion. Rafa Cabrera-Bello has also won here.
Give us one attribute that you think suits best at this course as well, Steve.
I think you've got to putt well. I think this is an easy course. I think the first day will be a bit more about survival, but the final 3 days, you're going to have to go really low, and we'll get up towards that 20 under par winning mark again.
Okay, right, let's get a show then, shall we? John Rahm, as it stands, is taking part and he's the 7-2 favourite. Tommy Fleetwood at 10s alongside Tyrrell Hatton, Aaron Wright at 14, Shane Lowry 16, Matt Wallace 22, a pony for Patrick Reed 25-1, then 28 bar including Matteo Manassero and Pavon, the defending champion, Steve. Right, how many in the team this week?
We got 5 selections at healthy prices. We'll come on to the favourites at the end. None of the market leaders appeal to me in this.
Marvellous. That's what we like. Each way a plenty this week. Then who is the main selection for the Spanish Open?
Julian Gelliar. 75-1 available about Julian Gelliar. We had a French winner of this tournament last year, as you mentioned, Matthew Pavon. I think we're going to get another Frenchman winning this year, another French maiden winning this year. Gelliar's been playing some really solid golf lately. He's made 9 cuts in a row. Well, he had made 9 cuts in a row, and then he missed the cut by a shot last week at Wentworth. Nothing to worry about for me. Nice little weekend breather before a tournament he relishes. Gelliar has teed up at this week's venue twice before. He finished 3rd on his course debut in the 2021 Spanish Open, and on his return last year, he finished 6th. So round scores of 66, 66, 66, 69, 72, 63, 67, 67. So he was 18 under par for the final 54 holes of last year's championship. Nobody outscored him from Friday through Sunday last year. And these two efforts, these great course efforts, have come off the back of poor form. He was world number 608 going into the 2021 Spanish Open. He just missed the cut in the Dunhill Links. He hadn't had a top 10 finish all year. Then, going into last year's Spanish Open, he just missed 3 cuts in a row. He carded an 81 at Wentworth in the build-up. So, still contended at Club de Campo in terrible form. So, this time, in much finer fettle, I'm expecting massive things from Julian. This is a 39-year-old. He's won twice on the Challenge Tour. The big DP World Tour breakthrough comes on Sunday.
Lovely. And we've started with a 75-1 shot. Do the prices get bigger, Steve?
We go down, then up.
Okay. Okay, right. Next best then is
Alex Fitzpatrick, who I've been backing a lot this year. I thought I was done for him for the year. He was 6th at Cranthorpe Thiar when we were on him. I thought maybe I might leave him till next year, but this looks such a big opportunity for him. I think this is another maiden with a really great chance of the breakthrough. He's been a steady improver over the last couple of years, and he won on the Challenge Tour last summer. He's been banking loads of healthy DP World Tour checks since. And over the last month or so, been really impressive. 6 at Crans, 12th in the British Masters, 9th in the Irish Open. Missed the cut by a shot at Wentworth last week. It's just like Gelliar, but you know, no dramas about that. It freshens you up nicely for this one. He finished 20th on his debut last year, Spanish Open debut. He's 8 under par for the weekend. He played well in Spain as an amateur. Those forecast Thursday wins, no problem for Fitzpatrick, no problem for Gelliar. And how long before, yeah, he must be thinking this himself, Alex, how long before he takes over as the number one Fitzpatrick? I mean, it's a big claim, but Matt, his brother Matt, is really struggling at the moment. Alex is getting slowly but surely, up the world ranking. So yeah, I can see a time when Alex takes over from his brother as the best Fitzpatrick. That sibling rivalry is intensifying.
Interesting on the up there. How much are you weighing on this wind, Steve, that's coming? Is that a big factor for you this week?
I'd like players who are comfortable, and it's just that first day is going to be breezy, and then it's calm thereafter. Galliere and Fitzpatrick, no worries about them. Fitzpatrick's 45-1 as we record at 10 a.m. on Tuesday.
Okay, well, I was waiting for you to put up Fleetwood. As soon as I hear wind, I just think Fleetwood. But right, we'll move on. Yeah. We'll come to him at the near the head of the market. Who's third in?
Alessandro Del Rey. I've got 300-1 shots for you now to finish the stake in Panini. Alessandro Del Rey is the first one. He's the only Spaniard on my team this week. You know, much expected by the bookmakers from John Rahm. I think Del Rey will upstage the Basque country boy. I mean, Del Rey is a proper local hero this week. He's born in Madrid and he's playing well enough to make an impact at a fancy price. Ultra attacking, 26 years of age. He was one of Spain's best junior players, won on the Alps Tour in 2020, carded around a 58 on the Challenge Tour in 2021, shows what an explosive player he is. Won on the Challenge Tour in 2022, been threatening a DP World Tour breakthrough since then. Fired a second round 62 in the Scottish Open in July on his way to 15th place there, a Rolex Series event. Set the early pace in the Irish Open the week before last. He's been banking healthy DP World Tour checks on courses that don't suit him. You know, he Cranthorpe Fair, Royal County Down, Wentworth, don't suit him, but he's been doing okay. Now he comes to an ideal layout in his homeland. He carded four rounds in the 60s for 17th place in this event last year. I think he's going to go even better this time.
Lovely. Nice big price there. And we've got two more to come, all at three-figure prices. So who's fourth in the team, Steve?
Gavin Green. Another attacking golfer, ideally suited to this assignment. From Friday onwards, I'm expecting fireworks from Del Rey and Gavin Green. Green was in poor form coming into this event last year. He'd missed his last two cuts, but he finished 28th. He was 11 under par for the final three rounds. His build-up this time is more solid. He was ninth in the British Masters at the start of the month. Like Galliere and Alex Fitzpatrick, he missed the Wentworth Cup by a shot. Don't worry about that. He actually left Wentworth in really good heart because he opened with a 76, but his second round was 67. Only four players outscored Green in the second round of the BMW PGA last week. He'll tee up this week, expecting to build on that, expecting to contend. He's won on the Asian Tour. I think a long overdue DP World Tour break for entirely feasible at the age of 30 on Sunday. It's bonkers that he hasn't won on the DP World Tour. So much talent.
Okay, right. All these exotic accents, and then we just come out of the Gavin Green from nowhere. There.
Yeah, it's hard to give that one any spunk.
Right, one more to come. Fifth member of the team is
Rasmus Nygaard Petersen. That is a name, isn't it? Another 100-1 chance. A three-time champion on the Challenge Tour this season. So he's won automatic promotion to the DP World Tour. You win three times on Challenge Tour, boom, you're a DP World Tour player. Clearly good enough to win on the DP World Tour. He's a 25-year-old Dane who excites the pants off me. I think he's really going places. He nearly won in Spain in May. So he lost by a shot in the Challenge de España. He was 19th in the Danish Championship on the DP World Tour a month ago when we were on him. He missed the cut by a shot in the Irish Open last time out, Royal County Down. Much less suitable than Club de Campo Villa de Madrid. So, I think we're going to get a barnstorming Spanish Open debut from Rasmus Nygaard Petersen.
Well, five big prices there, Steve. Five each-way bullets to be fired. Wonderful. Yes. 7-2 the field then, John Rahm. Now, you hinted at one or two negatives, the fact he might not even be teeing it up. I mean, at this sort of price, that's more than enough reason to give him a swerve, right?
Yeah, because it's difficult to know what his physical and mental state is. I don't want to be taking short prices. It's fraught with danger because physically we know that he withdrew from the LIV Golf Team Championship on Saturday morning with flu-like symptoms. Well, if the flu-like symptoms are the flu, then he's not going to be feeling very good this week, is he? It takes a while to get over that. Mentally, he's got all the golfing politics to deal with, as you mentioned. You know, he says he hasn't paid the fines to the DP World Tour. Should he be allowed into this event? Therefore, you know, the sponsors have obviously had a word. The galleries are desperate to see him. But yeah, his participation it throws another chunk of mud into already extremely muddy waters. Yeah, it's such a sorry saga, this split in golf. And this is another interesting turn. We know he likes the course. We know he's in good form before his illness. But I can't take the odds. I mean, even I mentioned babies. His wife is due to give birth any second. It's hard to get details on the exact delivery date, but I'm pretty certain it's close. And he's talked about how the pregnancies have complications and whatnot. So he's got a lot on his mind. He's not feeling very well physically. So there's just not enough. You cannot get involved in Burlington Bertie. I've seen Burlington Bertie. I think you're a madman. Obviously you can win, but I think you're a madman if you take Burlington Bertie this week.
And this is what you're getting from Steve Palmer. This is a man seeking out due dates of pregnant wives.
I've been on to the midwives trying to get it, but the privacy laws, they're not allowed to tell me.
Right, that is John Rahm at 7-2. Then we've got Tommy Fleetwood at 10-1. Now, you obviously might have had him on the radar because you had him on side of Wentworth last week. Steve, yeah. Was he close to being in the team again? He's only 10-1.
He missed a nine-foot putt on the last to get me the place last week. 9-1 is not great, is it? I mean, he was 39th on his only previous Club de Campo start. I was really disappointed with his putting last week. I can certainly live without that. And then you got his great mate. Well, I don't know whether they're great mates. They're probably not that great mates now. Tyrrell Hatton is the same price, isn't he? He's 9-1. He's had a long journey from Texas to Madrid after the LIV Golf Team Championships. He suddenly had extra responsibility for Legion 13. He became the leader of Legion 13 when Rahm pulled out. This is Hatton's course debut this week. You remember he imploded from the front in the British Masters. You know, he had the British Masters at his mercy at the halfway stage and was absolutely appalling from there. So no interest in Hatton. And Shane Lowry. I mean, why is Shane Lowry playing in this? I mean, it's Ryder Cup points, I guess, but he must be running low on energy. If you look at Shane Lowry's recent schedule, Open Championship, which he contended, Olympics, Wyndham Championship, a full FedEx Cup playoffs, Irish Open, which is a huge event for him, BMW Championship. You know, he must be craving a dark room and a pint of Guinness. I was surprised to see him in this field, and it's his course debut as well. So how much time is he going to spend, learning the course? Hardly any, I would suggest.
Anyone anywhere near the head of the market or in the top 20 in the betting that you sort of thoughts about having on side, Steve?
No, sir. This was a week that very exciting team of outsiders and, no regrets.
No regrets. A good way to live your life. Wonderful stuff. Right. We spoke about a team event, LIV Golf, and there is another team event this week as well. We're off to Canada here for the President's Cup, which is Team USA against the rest of the world minus Europe. Steve, give us a little bit of background on the President's Cup for people that don't know.
Well, the format, we got two teams of 12, six automatic qualifiers in each team, six captains wildcard picks in each team, a total of 30 points available over 4 days, 18-hole match play, matches that are tied after 18 holes are a draw, half a point for each team. We've got 5 4-balls matches on Thursday, 5 foursomes matches on Friday, 4 4-balls matches on Saturday morning, 4 foursomes matches on Saturday afternoon, and then the 12 singles on Sunday. Punters should note that the 15-15 tie is a runner. They just share the cup in that scenario. It has happened before.
So boring sharing it. Can't play. It's like cricket. You can't play for 4 days and have a draw. Steve, the course, Royal Montreal. So what do we know about the course?
Yes, the Blue Course, Royal Montreal, Quebec, Canada, 7,319 yards par 70. So a long par 70, only 2 par 5s. It's got enormous greens, but it's long, tough. It's hosted the President's Cup before in 2007. The Americans won that one 19.5 to 14.5. It staged loads of Canadian Opens, most recently in 2014 when Tim Clark edged out Jim Furyk. Shows you the sort of players that can thrive at this track. They're both two of the most accurate drivers ever. Strong lag putting is also essential for me. Yeah, the player's going to be faced with some huge putts this week. Fascinating venue. And the weather, we've got a wet and potentially thundery Thursday, I'm afraid to report. But it should make way for a cool, clear conditions from then on.
How would you go about finding who are the strongest lag putters in golf?
The putting stats obviously incorporate that. I watch a lot of golf. I know he's a strong lag putter.
Give us the strongest lag putter in golf.
It used to be Martin Kaymer, didn't it? I'd say Martin Kaymer probably still have claims because he was such a poor chipper. The players that are rubbish at chipping tend to be good leg putters. Martin Kaymer, David Guilford back in the day never used to chipper off the green, did he? He preferred putting from anywhere. So, let's go with David Guilford if he's still alive.
Right, let's before we get into it, the prices, etc. I mean, let's have a look at the teams because, I mean, Team USA is just littered with stars, right? We've got Scotty Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa. They're all there. Patrick Cantlay, strong team, Steve.
They're all there. But they can be beaten. And will they be beaten this week? I hear you ask.
Well, yeah. I mean, the international team led by Mike Weir. We've got Matsuyama. Im's in there. Adam Scott has been in great form as well. Jason Day. So strong team from the home team, if you like, because they're here in Canada. Prices 4-9, Team USA. And then we've got... prices here. 4-9 Team USA, 11-4 internationals, and 15-1 top price the draw, which you think is a bit of a runner, Steve. Now we've got correct score markets as well. USA 16.5 to 13.5 is around about the favorite at 10-1. Just to lift the trophy, USA 3's on, Team International 11-4. There are a plethora of top point scorers, all sorts going on. Have you got a view on who's just going to win it, Steve?
Yes, I have a very surprising view. I think the internationals are going to win it. And I know that's going to shock a lot of people, that prediction. But Team USA have won the last 9 President's Cups. I think that streak's going to come to an end this week. I've certainly got no interest in chunking those short prices about the Americans. I think there's weaknesses in this American lineup, which can be exposed by a highly motivated and methodical international squad. I think they've got the best captain, and I think they've got the best approach to the analytics, which are so important in team competitions these days. Jim Furyk was a poor Ryder Cup captain in 2018. Remember he had the dream team in 2018, and they were crushed by a 17.5, 10.5 scoreline in Paris. So this week is Jim Furyk's chance of redemption. I can see things going wrong for this dour character. Jim Furyk is not an inspirational character. He's downbeat, he's cautious. USA have some scars from the last year's Ryder Cup as well, Dave. They took a beating in last year's Ryder Cup. They're carrying some scars from that competition, I feel. If the internationals can open some of these scars early, I can see an upset this week. Furyk is probably not the man to have in your corner if the cuts start opening, to use a bit of boxing parlance. If the cuts open early, Furyk's not the man to have in your corner. And his leadership is further undermined by the presence of Keegan Bradley. I mean, it's very strange situation. You've got the current American Ryder Cup captain playing for Jim Furyk, the President's Cup captain. The President's Cup, so often used as the... sort of warm up for the Ryder Cup. Is Keegan Bradley going to be in Jim Furyk's ear on potential pairings? Is there going to be some sort of power struggle going on behind the scenes? Entirely feasible. I mean, Bradley's not the sort, he's no shrinking violet. If he wants a pairing tested, he probably will offer that up to Furyk. I think Furyk shouldn't have picked Bradley. I mean, I think Furyk got his picks all wrong. He played it very cautious. He's a very cautious character. He picked the next 6 names off the automatic list. So you had these 6 automatic qualifiers, and Furyk just picked the next 6. And I think he made some howlers. I mean, I think Keegan Bradley shouldn't have been picked. I think Brian Harman was lucky to get picked. Max Homer, extremely lucky to get picked. And why not blood some of your talented youngsters? You know how much I like Nick Dunlap, Akshay Bhatia, Davis Thompson. Why not give them a little taste of representing the Stars and Stripes and they could become Ryder Cup players. Instead, you've gone for Keegan Bradley, Brian Harman. I mean, I think he's wasted the opportunity to get those youngsters in there, which would provide a bit of vibrancy to the team. Politics, of course, we've already mentioned politics on this podcast. The fact that Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka are not on the Team America, you know, obviously two of the best players, certainly two of the best 12 players in America. Billy Horschel, we mentioned West Ham's Billy Horschel, another chance to mention your team. You know, I think he would have been a good asset. So I think there's weak links on this American side. Max Home has been awful lately. Brian Harman has been pretty poor lately. I suspect Keegan Bradley is going to be a big flop. Who knows how Russell Henley is going to react to his big chance. You know, Russell Henley, not the most confident of characters. I can see him wilting in this event. And I see some really solid pairings for the internationals, Dave. Yeah, the internationals have got four really reliable Koreans that can be paired together. I love that Korean core to this team. Then you've got Adam Scott and Jason Day. Yeah, a formidable potential all-Aussie alliance. You know, they've played together in the Zurich Classic pairs event. They seem to get on very well. You know, that is a great pairing. Corey Connors and Christian Bezuidenhout in the foursomes, you know, just oozing driving accuracy on a course that's made for driving accuracy. You know, they're excellent foursomes options. Taylor Pendrith, Minwoo Lee, you know, huge four balls weapons, you know, explosive birdie makers, loads of power. And then I haven't even mentioned Hideki Matsuyama. So, I mean, it's like an embarrassment of riches. I think the internationals have got a really handy side here. There's only two rookies on this team. This international team is actually more experienced in President's Cup terms than the Americans. And they've also got the three best putters. Yeah, this is a lesser point, but it's worth making. The three best putters in this competition on the PGA Tour season rankings are Mackenzie Hughes, Taylor Pendrith and Jason Day. We've mentioned these enormous greens. I think there's going to be a premium on putting this week, Dave. And finally, I know you're keen for me to shut up, but finally.
No, listen, you're the poles of wisdom. The Palmer's poles of wisdom can keep coming.
I just got a lot to get off my chest, but finally, I think home advantage is significant because you've got a Canadian captain in Mike Weir. Weirzy knows how to play match play at Royal Montreal. Weirzy, as I like to call him. Tiger Woods always used to call him Weirzy. He beat Tiger Woods in the 2007 President's Cup singles at this track. Weirzy has got an amazing President's Cup record for an international. You know, hardly anyone's got a good record as an international President's Cup. Weirzy has. Weirzy knows how to play President's Cup golf. He can help his players a lot this week. He particularly knows how to play on this course. He beat the greatest player ever on this course in Tiger Woods. And the two best performances in President's Cup history, in internationals, President's Cup history, the two best international performances have been when they've had a home captain. The one time they won this was with Peter Thompson, an Aussie at Royal Melbourne in 1998 as captain. And then they got a draw at Fancourt in South Africa when Gary Player was captain in 2003. So I think having a home captain in his country of birth is a factor. He's going to get this crowd pumping. We've got three Canadians on the team as players. And Canadian golf fans are loud and proud, Dave. I mean, the Canadian Open is one of the best PGA Tour stops of the whole year because the crowd's so enthusiastic and loud. Yeah, I think the internationals can keep this competitive, get that big, enthusiastic, rowdy home crowd on their side. And I think they're going to sneak a famous victory. I haven't found anyone who agrees with me yet, but I don't care. I don't care. I like that.
Alyssa, when you're punting, Steve, sometimes swimming against the tide is the way to make the best money. So you're going for the outsiders. I think it's a very, very interesting point you make about this would have been a great opportunity to blood in some of the younger Americans and give them a grounding, because this isn't as big as the Ryder Cup, but it would have been a nice intro into a similar format, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think Jim Furyk is seeking that redemption for the 2018 Ryder Cup flop. You know, his captaincy there was questioned. So I think he's desperate to win. But ordinarily, the Americans like to use this as a warm-up for the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup is much more important to them. Furyk's on a personal mission for redemption. But I just think his approach is very cautious. And I think his approach, from what I'm hearing, is all about gut instinct and chemistry in the locker room. You know, Max Homer statistically should not be in this team, but, you know, he's a good lad to have around the locker room. Mike Weir's approach and their team has been all about analytics. And, you know, look at recent team competitions, even the last one, the Solheim Cup one, the American skipper there, Stacey Lewis, big on analytics. Yeah. I think it's the approach that wins. You remember Paul McGinley was fantastic on that for Europe. Luke Donald. I mean, I think you've got to look at statistics and in terms of pairings. And I think, yeah, Mike Weir just seems bang on it. Jim Furyk, for me, looks like a sort of worried man already.
If you're Weirzy, Steve, how are you setting up the course?
Weirzy wants it nice and tight like it was when he beat Tiger Woods. I mean, Tiger Woods, it's fascinating this. I know it's crazy that I'm talking about Tiger Woods on you know, I'm still talking about Tiger Woods, but
he's the GOAT.
We'll keep talking about him. His first missed cut as a professional came in the 1997 Canadian Open at Royal Montreal. He's never got on with this course, Tiger Woods. This is an interesting stat for you. Yeah. So I think Weirzy will like it nice and tight. I'm really excited about the international's chance. I'm with you. I like swimming against the tide.
Right. Okay. So you just play them at the prices to win, handicap, correct scores. What's your sort of view and play here, Steve? And do you have the internationals on side here as a punter?
Well, you've got to have a correct correct score stab, haven't you? I would suggest 16-14 would be the internationals' victory. 18-1, that is, because they're so unfancied. So I see a narrow victory for the internationals, maybe by 1 point, but 2 points better value. And then obviously we've got the top scorer markets.
Yes, I love getting involved in them ones. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you need a bit of luck in these because many a time I've got very excited about top scorer bets and they end up playing each other, which is always a devastating blow. But so keep stakes sensible with that in mind. But I think top international, Tom Kim is the man to be on. 15-2 available about Tom Kim, who slowly but surely found his A game this year. He's played his way back into good form. He was fourth in the Canadian Open in June, so he's returning to a place he enjoyed in June. He lost a playoff for the Travelers Championship, you might remember, in June as well against Scottie Scheffler. He's nicely rested. He only played the first leg of the FedEx playoffs, the St. Jude. I think he's the player that the Americans will want to avoid in the draw. You know, he's got a fearlessness, isn't he? You remember him in the last President's Cup, Dave? He's really, really into that. He linked up with Kyung-Hoon Lee to beat Scottie Scheffler and Sam Burns in the Saturday foursomes. And then later that day, linked up with Siwoo Kim to beat Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele in the Saturday fourball. So, you know, there was incredible scenes on the 18th green when the two Koreans defeated Cantlay and Schauffele. So he's beaten the best that the Americans have to offer as Tom Kim in an away match. This week in a home match, I see him make him merry. I think he's going to have a really exciting week, probably with Siwoo Kim as a natural partner.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think it matters more to the internationals than it does the Americans, this event?
I think that was a question that was posed to Jim Furyk, and he took great offence because, he's on this personal mission. But yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah, it means huge. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think team spirit in the internationals camp has really built over the last few editions. They played really well at Royal Melbourne and came close there. Really plucky effort last time out in away from home, Quail Hollow. So I think team spirit is building. You got like Ernie Els, who was captain at Royal Melbourne, is a vice captain this week. Yeah, the backroom staff has been pretty consistent. It's Weirzy's turn to shine, of course. But yeah, I think internationals are desperate to end this drought. Adam Scott, probably more so than anyone. He's played in more President's Cup combat than anyone. He knows.
And he's in good form as well, Adam Scott.
He's in great nick and is probably the most motivated player of the lot. You know, he's gone through all those years of hurt. You know, he's like an England international footballer who's going to the World Cup. And Adam Scott knows he's got to play a leading role this week. You know, him and Hideki Matsuyama, I mean, they've got some experience in this team. And with the young Koreans as well, I think there's enough there. I am surprised I'm the only one saying this, but I think people have forgotten how, you know, the Ryder Cup last year was a real sort of mental blow for the American side. You know, they were almost, you know, four down after the opening session. You know, there's scars in there. So it's all about, you play golf in your head, Dave. You play golf in your head. And I think
top US point scorer, you got a view top on that?
I have a very strong view on that, actually. Yeah, I think value wise, Sam Burns at 9-1 is the best points scorer bet of the lot, actually. The two best American pairings are likely to be Scotty Scheffler and Sam Burns. I think they'll play together. They want to play together. They're great friends. They want to play together. Jim Furyk, as I say, seems this cautious, timid, cowed captain.
He won't want to upset the chef, will he?
He won't want to upset the chef. So he'll say to the chef, who do you want to play with? He'll say Sam Burns. And then the other partnership that's really, really solid is obviously Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. The biggest odds of those four players, I think, they're the four to concentrate on in that market. And the biggest odds by a long way is Sam Burns. Yeah, Sam Burns is 9-1. They'll be highly motivated to improve their record together. They haven't done well. They haven't scored many points together so far in this burgeoning union. So they want to advertise their credentials for the Ryder Cup next year. Zach Johnson only gave them one chance in the Ryder Cup last year. He split them up after the first session. That seemed extremely harsh. I think Scheffler and Burns is the best pairing in the American side, because Burns finished the PGA Tour season in hugely impressive fashion. We all know what Scotty Scheffler did, and they've got that additional hunger. I think they're probably the most motivated of the pairings, because they know they need to do themselves justice this time.
Okay, lovely. Well, if you're in agreement with Steve, let us know in the comments below. We've got some very, very shrewd viewers on YouTube. They put their comments in. They're always in and amongst the winners. So if you're with or against the outsiders, if you're with them like Steve, let us know in the comments below. And I think it could be quite an interesting market in running this one, Steve. If the internationals get off to a good start, it might end up after a day or two being a pick'em.
That's it. I'm seeing this as a boxing match. Get early punches into the American noses. As I say, those scars will open up. I think it's going to be a close contest. I don't see this being another American romp.
Well, there are loads of ways to have the internationals on side if you with Steve. So maybe the handicap, there's all sorts. There's loads of markets out there. So dig around and you'll be able to find some big prices, ways of getting the internationals on side. Right, let's have a roundup then, Steve, before we close the show. We're off to Spain first. Let us know your five players that you fancy there, and then an overview of the President's Cup.
Julian Guerrier, Alex Fitzpatrick, Alejandro Del Rey, Gavin Green, Rasmus Nygaard Peterson. And the President's Cup, I'm going to suggest four wagers. The internationals to win the trophy. Tom Kim, top internationals point scorer. Sam Burns, top American point scorer. The internationals to win 16-14.
Simple as that. Outsiders of the field. Well, thank you for everyone watching, getting involved, putting your comments in below. We've got a very active community on YouTube. Steve, it's been great to see you. What you got planned for this week?
I've got to buy a new gap wedge, actually, Dave. I lost my beloved 52 degree Titleist Vokey wedge at Killeen Castle. I left it by the first green. No one handed it in when I left. So if you are a Killeen Castle member, if you find my beloved 52 degree Titleist wedge, I'll be yours forever, because it's my favorite club. But I'm sort of coming to terms with the fact I'm never going to see it again now.
Could you be bought? If there's a manufacturer out there who likes watching the sweet spot, could Steve Palmer be bought by a manufacturer? Come down, Steve, for a fitting. And, would you be open to that?
I think I would be open to that, yeah. But, my golf bag's in disarray now. You know when you get a settled golf bag and then one club goes, it's like that.
I'm right here. Look, there you go.
I might need to come and pilfer one off you. But the thing is, I can't get one new wedge. I'll have to get three new wedges, because then there'll be different –
Got a bit of OCD in the bag.
And they don't build that club anymore. It's not available to buy that club anymore. So that's my number one priority. Get my golf
available on the first green somewhere. I know that much.
Well, somebody's got it. So if you're watching this and you're a Killeen Castle member, hunt it down for me, please.
Right, good stuff. Lovely to see you as always, Steve. Remember to gamble responsibly. Enjoy the golf, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.